May it please the court, Jim Bowers here on behalf of appellants who are the intervening property owners below, all of whom abut Bridle Park Lane, which is the north-south street this case is about. Bridle Park Lane is a residential street in the unincorporated part of Platte County. The question before the court is whether it's a public street or a private road. The trial court held that Bridle Park Lane is a private road. We raised 4 points on appeal. First, that the road, Bridle Park Lane, was dedicated as a public street pursuant to state statute. Second, that in the event you find it's not dedicated pursuant to statute, that a common law dedication occurred. And in the alternative, if a common law dedication did not occur, that a prescriptive easement was established. And our fourth point was that the trial court should have dismissed this petition for declaratory judgment and injunction at the outset because the cause was not brought within the applicable statute of limitations. The problem with the holding in this case is that it leaves certain property owners in Bridle Park 1, and I'm going to discuss the details of this in just a moment, but if you'll bear with me, leaves the property owners in Bridle Park 1, specifically lots 4, 5, 6, 7, and 9, landlocked with no access to their property from...
Well, there's always an easement of necessity, and it's been used in that way over this time, so they're not landlocked in the sense that they've had an easement, right, to use... As a private road.
And that's the problem here, is the facts sometimes get squished together. We're talking now about Bridle Park 1, and I'm going to go through the history of Bridle Park 1 in just a moment. But the owners in Bridle Park 1 do not have an easement, unless it's an easement by prescription, to access Mace Road.
I mean, there's a difference between calling it a public road and saying they're landlocked and have no way to get on and off their property, because there are other legal...
They would have to take some additional action because right now they do not.
Well, the landlocked, the Halman case, the Missouri Court of Appeals Eastern District dealt with the landlocked issue where you have to allow someone egress and ingress.
Easement by necessity, which is very different than a public road. So,
right.
It's not the only choice is public road or they can never leave their property.
I agree with that. But okay. The access to those lots is certainly in question.
Okay.
If this dedication did not occur. It also leaves some of the property owners in Bridle Park 2 to the south with no access to their property from the south end of the easement through Bridle Park 1. Let me talk a little bit about the history of this case. Prior to 1980, Mr. Bloom owned approximately 210 acres that was south of Mace Road, which runs east and west along the northern boundary of Mr. Bloom's property. In 1980, that same year, Mr. Bloom sold the north 75 acres of his 210 acres to three property owners, and he reserved easements through the middle of that 75 acres so that his south 135 acres that he continued to own would have access to Mace Road. The easements were 30-foot wide easements from the three purchasers. And according to the uncontroverted testimony of the plaintiff's expert witness in this case, a surveyor, Mr. Charlie Coots, the 30-foot wide easements do not have a common boundary. There is a 10-foot strip between these 30-foot easements that is not included in either of the easements. Those same three owners, 1 year later in 1981, subdivided the northern parcel, this 75 acres, into 10 lots by platting Bridle Park 1 and dedicating a 60-foot Bridle Park Lane through the middle of those 10 lots. And it generally followed the area where the easements were located. But it was 60-foot wide, and remember, we have these two 30-foot wide easements with a 10-foot separation in between. This 60-foot easement followed generally those easements and included within it the 10-foot strip that was not subject to the easements. Now, we didn't have the property surveyed, so we don't know that exactly 25 feet of each of the 30-foot easements were outside the 60-foot, these 60-foot wide dedicated road. But it is clear the 10-foot strip was within the 60-foot wide dedicated road. It is also clear that all of the property owners consented to the creation of Bridle Park Lane through Bridle Park 1. And it's also clear that Mr. Bloom, who held the easements running through Bridle Park 1, did not sign the plat. In 1984, Mr. Bloom sold the balance of his property, the 135 acres to the south, along with the easement. And he sold it to a Mr. Pease. But before Mr. Pease closed on the transaction, the county approved the plat of Bridle Park 2, subdividing Bridle Park 2 into 6 tracts. As soon as Mr. Pease closed on the property, he then in turn sold all 6 of the tracts to 6 owners, and they all approved the plat of Bridle Park 2. Now, there was no easement running through Bridle Park 2, so the easement only exists with respect to that portion of Bridle Park Lane outside the 10-foot strip in Bridle Park 1. Bridle Park 2 also dedicated a 60-foot wide Bridle Park Lane that connected to Bridle Park Lane as it was platted in Bridle Park 1 to the north. And that had been done 3 years earlier. The 6 tracts platted as Bridle Park 2 were sold to individuals who all consented to the creation of the tracts and the dedication of Bridle Park Lane on the Bridle Park 2 plat. At that point, Mr. Bloom no longer had any interest in Bridle Park 1, Bridle Park 2, or the easement. The 6 new owners controlled both the easement through Bridle Park 1 and the platted property in Bridle Park 2. Those owners clearly dedicated Bridle Park Lane through their consent to the plat. None of those 6 purchasers had any interest in Bridle Park Lane by their deed, by the conveyances from Pease. The only access to Mace Road, which they still needed to get to at the north, this east-west street, was from the dedicated road in Bridle Park 2 through the dedicated road in Bridle Park 1 to Mace Road. Since the platting of the property, approximately 13 homes have been constructed in Bridle Park 1 and Bridle Park 2, whose sole access is Bridle Park Lane. The county issued permits for construction of those homes because the lots had access to a public street, Bridle Park Lane. Subsequent, in 1998, the owner of the very bottom lot in Bridle Park 2, the Pienzes, which is the owner of Track 2, couldn't obtain title insurance until they and the other property owners in Bridle Park 2 approved a replat of Bridle Park 2 that allowed the creation of Bridle Park Lane to extend to the south of the Pienzes property to a property owned by Highland Oaks Development, Inc., so that all of the property owners within the plat would have access to Bridle Park Lane. Again, in 1988, when the replat was executed, it was executed by all of the owners, which encompassed all of the owners of the easement running through Bridle Park 1. During that conveyance in 1984, Mr. Pease sold Track 6 to a Mr. Beeth, B-E-E-T-H, who in turn in 1999 sold that track to Mr. Bateman, who is the plaintiff below and the respondent in this case. Bridle Park Lane was dedicated by statute in accordance with 2 statutes, Section 445-070 and Section 225-190. They both provide methods for dedication of a public road through the platted property.
Is in the question whether they could give something they didn't get, that if they never had, if the easement was retained by Mr. Bloom and he never gave it to the owners to whom he sold the other property, but then they could not agree to something on for property they didn't own?
That argument has some traction with respect to Bridle Park 1. It has no traction with respect to Bridle Park 2, because the easements, plural, only existed with respect to Bridle Park 1.
And he sold all his interest in Bridle Park 2?
He sold all of his interest in Bridle Park 2. So as of 1984...
But we still have the question of the part of it that goes in Bridle Park 1.
Yes.
And that deals with the statute of limitations and so forth, those issues, which you're running close to your time, so...
Yes.
Could you address the statute of limitations argument then, before you run out of time?
I think the statute of limitations argument is, in our sense, clear. The issue arose as to the so-called seizure of the easements with the dedication of Bridle Park Lane through Bridle Park 1 in 1981. And with respect to any claim that seizure was improper, it had to be brought within 10 years of the so-called seizure.
Is that a corollary to adverse possession?
I'm sorry?
Is that a corollary to adverse possession? That you're arguing it as a statute of limitations.
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a related concept of adverse possession, that if you openly, notoriously possess the land of another for a period of time, you
Correct.
Obtain title. Is that, are we talking about apples and apples here? Are those different ideas?
I think they're somewhat different ideas. That idea is more similar to the prescriptive easement argument, I think.
So under the statute, I don't have to know that you have an adverse interest in the real estate to me.
Yeah, that's correct. You do not need to know that.
Okay.
What about the other cases that say that you have to have an actual controversy in order for the statute of limitations to begin to run? Are these two lines of cases in conflict, and do we have to resolve that?
I don't know that they're in conflict, but I think the conflict occurs in this case by virtue of the plats, which are a public record.
But where's the controversy? No one's tried to assert ownership or control over it.
That's correct, and that's one of the interesting things about the case. No one has tried to assert that the easement was inconsistent with the public dedication.
Right. And you're basically saying that the confirmation of the plat is no different than if somebody had done a deed. That's when, if there was a controversy, occurred, because I've done something that's theoretically against your interest, and it's a matter of public record, whether it's a plat or a deed or anything else, and that's when the clock starts running.
Section 445.070, Your Honor, provides that when a plat's acknowledged, certified, and recorded, it conveys the fee to that such parcel as is intended for public use.
Does that apply to Park 1, where Mr. Bloom did not sign the plat?
Well, it clearly applies to the 10-foot strip, because Mr. Bloom had no claim to the 10-foot strip. The areas that are in tension are those portions of Bridle Park Lane as dedicated that are also included within the easement. And our position is that they can coexist. There's no conflict between them, because Mr.
But it's his I mean, he says there is a conflict. To make it public property means it's not his. It's a public road. It's no longer his road. It was his property. He simply allowed.
It was. But the way the easements were set out, it was never his road, because there's a 10-foot strip between that was not subject to the...
But the other 30 feet were still his. He just allowed an easement through them, right? What was the easement? He retained an easement, or he gave them an easement through his property?
They actually dedicated an easement to him as part of the closing of the sale of the real estate. So he received easements from the property owners who had purchased the 75 acres from him.
Are there any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
So why is his easement destroyed by making it a public road? Can he still use it, and therefore it's not inconsistent?
Well, actually, when it comes to public or to private road easements, there are several types that all the cases that both parties cited have. There are some that are just for access. That is, you know, you simply can come across my land to access something. And beyond that, the road is my control. You know, in the Terry case in 1965, it was a road that the Serbian estate owned, and they simply allowed other parties access to it. What we're talking about, though, is more like the Wild case. I think from the cases I've read, it's a slightly more common. It's not just, as the trial court found, an access easement. It's also a maintenance easement that Mr. Bloom, by virtue of the easements, could maintain, construct, grade, et cetera, the road to his pleasure. In fact, the language of the easement says he can locate it within the easement itself. So as in the Wild case, allowing the public to access it isn't merely simply some kind of consistent concurrent easement.
Who owns it now? If Mr. Bloom's not there, who owns this easement, in your view? Who owns this? Who possesses this easement right now?
It's all the people in BP2, Bridal Park 2, I've been referring to it as BP2. Those are his successors. Because at the time Mr. Bloom was granted the easement, he owned only the Bridal Park 2 property. And the easement is through Bridal Park.
So if they agreed to dedicate the easement to the public, which they did, didn't they? Then didn't they, when they did their plat, the people who bought Bridal Park 2, they agreed to dedicate any private roads to public use? But you're saying that did not include the easements through Bridal Park 1. But then who can? It just seems like they're sort of sitting out there with no ownership and no one controlling them.
They are owned, and I think I don't really know what the people intended in Bridal Park 2 in 1984 when they signed their plat, but this court has affirmed time and time again through the cases we cited in our brief that it reads the language in plats by their plain language. It ascertains their intent by their plain language. The plain language of the Bridal Park 2 plat says that it dedicates all streets shown on this plat that are heretofore not dedicated. Certainly, the Bridal Park 2 owners could have expressly relinquished their easements. Now, more interestingly, though, I think...
But before you go on, just
yes,
right there. So they dedicated the Bridal Park 2 easements to public easements, but not the Bridal Park 1. Is that your argument?
Bridal Park 2 wasn't an easement. There are no easements through Bridal
okay.
Park 2.
The streets. They dedicated the streets.
Which at the time didn't even exist. I think that's a very important
whatever point. They meant, it only included that plat, which was only Bridal Park 2, and so
precisely.
It did not dedicate Bridal Park 1.
Precisely, Your Honor.
And so they still own it, whether they realize it or not, the easements to Bridal Park 1.
That's exactly what the trial court held, and that's why it reached the result it did.
And half of them want to dedicate it as a public street and half don't at this point. Is that...
Some of the plaintiffs and defendants are, or, sorry, the,
yeah.
the
property owners are on both sides.
Are on both sides, exactly. And in both subdivisions. Some mm-hmm. are in Bridal Park 1, some are in Bridal Park 2. They're all over the place. The question at this point, and I think, you know, given subdivision law, in order to relinquish them at this point, since it was given to Mr. Bloom and he subdivided, his rights went out to everyone, because everyone in Bridal Park 2 has the right to use those easements. Given how subdivision law works, I think they'd have to have a vote or
well,
something.
Opposing
like
counsel's argument, if I understand it, is that when these plats were recorded, it's like recording a deed, and they said, you know, we're dedicating this to the public, and therefore that created the controversy or started the statute of limitations running. Are you saying there's no document that had that effect, that there was no document that purported to give these Bridal Park 1 easements to and make them public?
Precisely, Your Honor, and that's exactly what the trial court found. I think what we're dealing with are two separate conveyances, right? You have you have Bridal Park 1 to the north, which has these easements running through it. And they mentioned, Mr. Bowers mentioned our expert at trial. The expert actually said whatever the 60 versus 30 feet stuff is, the road that exists today tracks the easements. He did specifically testify that. But regardless, you have these easements going through the north. Through the south, it's just something that the people there own. I mean, it's their own property. There is no document that ever gave up the easements. As a result, the law of Missouri is that whatever happened in that plat in Bridal Park 2 to purportedly dedicate this to the public, because at the time, as the trial court found, there was no connection. Well, A, there was no road there in Bridal Park 2, but there was certainly no connection to any public road
like
Mace Road.
The Court of Appeals, I think, if I recall correctly, they found that the 81 and 84 platting basically were public acknowledgments that this became a public road and they started the statute running, you're saying it didn't actually affect this particular piece of land that's at issue now?
Precisely, Your Honor.
So they were simply factually incorrect on that?
Well, the Court of Appeals opinion has gone away. The Court of Appeals opinion is functus officio. It does not exist.
Yes.
I would take great issue with the Court of Appeals holding there, if that's indeed what they held. I think, actually, the Court of Appeals was, I suppose, misled. The statute of limitations in this case couldn't apply until there was an actual controversy. Regardless of what the documents were or were not, this is a declaratory action. And I think the Southern District in the Beavers case, which the other side does not address at all, really goes into this well, that to start a statute of limitations running, you have to have a right to sue. There was no right to sue Platte County in this case, or frankly anyone else, until for a declaratory judgment as to...
Would you have had a right to sue if, in your view, if the 84 Platte had reported to give these easements to the public? But you're saying there's nothing to start it then? Because wouldn't that be an actual controversy if they recorded?
If the language actually had been that, if the clear intent had been so and had been effective, which it couldn't have been under the present circumstances, then perhaps. But that's not the case that's before the court.
Why was the Court of Appeals wrong, or why would opposing counsel be wrong in suggesting 516.010 applies as opposed to the actual controversy?
Well, Your Honor, this is a declaratory action to declare that easements that have always existed still exist. No one encroached on those easements until 2005, when Mr. Bauer's client decided he wanted to make another subdivision in there, and he approached Platte County for permission to use this as a public road. Why does 516.010 not apply? Because there's no seizure of land. This is not an adverse possession case. This is not an action for ejectment when clearly that statute would apply. There may be some other statute of limitations out there that applies to this action as a declaratory case to declare the party's present rights. But regardless, the other side, although they didn't even cite 516.010 timely at before the trial court, they certainly haven't cited any other statute. So I know in Chapter 516 there's a general statute of limitations of 10 years on actions. Maybe that applies. I don't know. Regardless, that wasn't raised. It's not preserved. That's not the issue. The issue is, does 516.010, or frankly any statute, could it have started running before 2005? Because this is a declaratory action, no, it couldn't have.
So is 2005 the earliest that the statute of limitations would have started to run?
I think so, Your Honor, yes. I think the Beavers case is really directly on point in this position. In Beavers, you had a homeowners association that was going to file liens against two members because they owed back homeowners association dues. Apparently, both sides had long had an academic ongoing controversy that the association was never validly created back in 1972. In 2000, the homeowners sue for a declaratory judgment that the organization itself is invalid, that it was never validly incorporated 30 years earlier. At that point, the trial court, for the same reasons that opposing counsel suggests, said, well, this could have been litigated 30 years ago, and dismissed it for a violation of 516.010. The Court of Appeals Southern District reversed because, for exactly the reason that I'm advocating, that until 2000, until there was some actual controversy admitting of specific relief between the parties, there could not have been a right to commence, a right to sue. And I never try to hazard a guess as to, or at least tell the court why I think it took transfer, but I think the court took transfer of this case to determine how statutes of limitations start running in declaratory actions, since Beavers really is the only case that's out there. But Beavers makes sense, right? This court has said, especially for 516.010 and every statute of limitations since time immemorial, they only start running when there's a commencement of the right to sue. And parties only have the right to sue for a declaratory action when there is an actual controversy. Regardless of whether someone in 1984 or 1981 could have argued between themselves whether this was public or private, nobody used this as a public road and no one sought to until 2005. I know that the appellants harp in their briefs over and over again that, yes, there was public use of the road, but that ignores the standard of review. The trial court expressly found that the public had not used this road. Elementary Murphy v. Caron review, deference to the trial court's findings based on testimony. There was testimony in the record that no one had used, that no member of the public had used this road before Mr. Owens wanted to.
Can I ask just the practical effect of
aspects of this lawsuit. What's really being litigated is that whether or not this new land, the new third property, will have to obtain in some manner access up to Mace Road. So
really?
They have to buy eminent domain or buy ingress and egress, or they have to pay some of these people.
At its heart, I think so, Your Honor.
That's what this lawsuit's about.
I think that's its genesis. I shouldn't say that, you know, when we really get into the meat of it, that's what it's about. But its genesis most certainly.
But the result is, should your clients win, then these people in the new land are still going to have to find a way up to Mace Road.
You mean Mr. Owens with the new subdivision, that sort of thing? Yes, or Platte County could use eminent domain or something like that. And I think that's important because easements are a property right. This court has confirmed that time and time again. The U.S. Supreme Court has confirmed that time and time again.
People now have access to all their homes, right? That they go through this easement area and through the road that's now built in this Section 2. So it's not that people, or is there some suggestion they will not be able to get out of their homes now if you win here?
I don't think that's the suggestion. I think the suggestion is whether their rights as easement holders are annihilated. And again, part of that right, it's not just a mere access easement, is to maintain, construct, locate, grade, et cetera.
And that depends on the language of the easement that was retained.
And that is exactly in that easement, precisely, mm-hmm. Your Honor. And that's really what's at stake, is do my clients have those rights? Can those rights simply be annihilated by some people in 1981 without their consent?
So then you're saying the practical effect of the lawsuit is not whether the people in the new land can get in and out. It's whether your people control the roadway and the ability to make the roadway whatever they want it to be.
That's a lot of it, yes, Your Honor. And I think that was the point of the Wild case as well. The reason that simply granting a private road to the public doesn't create two concurrent easements when there's language about maintaining, constructing, locating, is those rights are annihilated.
I'm just trying to get to the real fight. I mean, what's really the issue here, and why do we have this lawsuit?
Why did my clients bring this lawsuit?
It's an academic issue, but who cares? Who cares and why is what I mean.
My clients care passionately because they have cared for this road. They've maintained it for a long time. They don't want other people. In fact, Mr. Bateman, I think on page 94 and 95 of the transcript, goes through a little speech and explains why they don't want this, that they've tried to keep out developers. And
there's a commercial use that's being proposed at the end of Park 2 that would create a lot of traffic on the road.
Precisely, Your Honor, and that's never been allowed.
But I'm not understanding. I thought you said that now you're saying they're saying something that happened in 1981 purported to give away your client's rights without authority. But I thought you said, in fact, it did not. It did not.
I agree it didn't. No, I'm saying most certainly it did not. Opposing counsel says it did.
And you're saying even if we interpret it to have done so, that didn't create an actual controversy because nobody acted on it. It was still treated as a private road?
No, Your Honor, I that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm sorry. You misunderstood me. There is no way that the Bridal Park 1 plat, which only is the servient estate, not the dominant estate in the easement, a servient estate simply cannot give away the rights of a dominant estate. The Wild case stands for that. Countless federal cases, we cite one from 1897, the Chicago Burlington Railroad, stands for that same proposition. The Bridal Park 1 plat simply could not have given away the Bridal Park 2 owner's easement rights. It cannot
Bridal Park 1 owners did purport to give away the right to use the easement and make it a public road, but it wasn't theirs to give away.
Precisely, and that's exactly what the trial court had. And Judge Price, that's the meat of this case when you get down to it. If that 1981 purported relinquishment is not effective, then the road could never, ever have become a public road because there was
Why
no
didn't that create a controversy, though, as to whether they had that right and so you had to bring an action within 10 years of that time?
Because again, when we're talking about a declaratory action, if that were the case, no one had actually proposed using it as public until then. There has to be, again, like Beavers, maybe in 1972 in Beavers, everyone disputed whether this organization had really come into effect.
Well, did their passion become passionate later on with the development, or did they have no passion in 1981 for their land at that point?
At that point, no one lived on the land, Your Honor.
But it was a change in the condition of the public versus your private. Your private exercise of domain was challenged and nothing was done.
Because no one actually, I'm not really sure anyone knew that was being done. I don't know that anyone really supported to do that.
It's sort of like adverse possession. You can't just say, I own this land, and then if no one complains for 10 years, you own it. You have to actually exercise dominion and control over it, and no one tried to do so. Is sort of what you're saying?
I don't think there's adverse possession, because once again, it would depend on the adverse possession does also depend on the actual use.
Right.
I can't simply say I own judge this house.
But you're
without
saying
actually
actual,
coming
good,
into
good.
It.
That's very good. But actual controversy, you're saying, also depends on actual use, on affecting this purported
precisely
ownership.
Exactly. Just like adverse possession. Again, a person cannot simply adverse possess property by claiming somewhere that
right.
they own it. They actually have to be there, open, notorious, hostile, all that. Seeing that I'm out of time, if there are no further questions, we'd
thank
ask the trial
much.
Court affirm the trial court's judgment.
Thank you.
Mr. Shaw, if there's evidence to support the trial court's finding that the public did not use the road before 2005, does that prohibit your client from being successful in this case?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. Okay. I think that the statutory or the dedication in the plat
is what
was successful, and that's what controls. And in that regard, first, there was no finding whatsoever by the trial court with regard to the statute's limitations. No finding, no ruling.
Isn't
no
that
nothing.
Because you didn't raise the numbers of the statute of limitations in your pleadings, and aren't you required to do that?
Well, the numbers were raised in the pre-submission briefs. And furthermore, not only were the numbers raised in the pre-submission briefs, but the issue was argued then by Mr. Bateman's attorney in his response to the pre-submission briefs. Mr. Bateman, by doing that, they acquiesced in bringing the issue before
but
the court.
But the trial court didn't rule on it. The trial court must not have thought it was before him, or he would have ruled on that.
Well, the trial court signed the judgment entry that was submitted by Mr. Bateman in toto without any changes. And so that's why the order said what it did. But he made no finding or ruling whatsoever on the statute of limitations. And that was tried by acquiescence in the trial court and in the Court of Appeals, for that matter. Now, with regard to the creation of the actual controversy, in 1984, when the owners of Bridle Park II signed their plat, those were all of the people who had any rights to those easements. At that point, they knew that there was a plat that had been approved by the county and was recorded that said that these roads are dedicated to public use.
But opposing counsel says that that simply dealt with, I mean, they were only talking about the plat for Bridle Park II, and that's not a controversy here. And they could give that away all they wanted, but it can't affect the rights to Bridle Park I easements when it didn't purport to do so. It only talked about this plat, which was Bridle Park II.
Well, it's in controversy also because Mr. Bateman also sought the vacation of the dedication of Bridle Park II. So that's also in controversy. But when they signed this plat, it said that there were dedication. There was a dedication to public use. They all had knowledge then that if they wanted to maintain
private. But it said of the land in this plat. It did say,
it did.
So it didn't, how could we interpret that to address a different plat?
Well, here's our interpretation of the difference between this case and the Sarcoxie case, which is, as you know, the only case.
But can you just address this? How could they give away their rights to easements in plat one when they just said this plat and it was plat two?
Because they were expressing their consent, their desire that there be public roadway down to their area. And they were the only people who had any rights in the easements at that time. And they were expressing their consent.
And how was that sufficiently evident from a document that only talked about Bridle Park II that they should know that their rights to Bridle Park I were being threatened and would have to then start bringing suit at that time when it didn't actually mention it?
It was not specifically mentioned in that plat. No, it was not.
So how would that start the 10 years running that they knew there was a controversy if it wasn't mentioned?
Because there was also the issue of the extension. And some of the people who signed Bridle Park II were the same people who signed Bridle Park I. They were the same individuals. For example, Mr. Beathy, who is the direct predecessor of Mr. Bateman, signed both plats. And the other people involved, Mr. Peace was involved in both. It was not just two completely separate deals. This is one large subdivision that was divided in more than one plat.
Any more questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.